This is Marco Reus.
This is Shinji Kagawa.
This is Nuri Sahin.
Hello, this is Jaden Sancho.
And you're listening to the Yellow Wall podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 472 of the Yellow Wall Pod. I'm your host, Stefan Wolfsburg, and today we will talk about Borussia Dortmund beating Bayern in Munich. We'll of course talk about the 50th birthday of the Westfalenstadion, Sven Mislintat maybe taking over as sporting director for Sebastian Kehl, and of course we will preview Saturday's game against VfB Stuttgart, which will be another top spiel for the Black and Yellows. For all that and more, joins me Matthias Zug. Hello, Matthias. Happy belated Easter. I hope you enjoyed your Easter feast.
Hello, Stefan, and happy belated Easter to you as well. Yes, I definitely did, aside from the fact that it's always good food. But it was just a very positive overall weekend. And needless to say, Borussia Dortmund had a lot to do with that, because when I saw Dortmund were going to play Bayern in München on Easter weekend, I'm like, well, there goes my Easter. You know, it would have taken
it's
a little bit to get over.
All about resurrection.
Yeah, yeah. No, whoa, nice segue there. But no, it was very, very good overall.
Yeah, for sure. And I, of course, have been excited ever since to talk about today, if I'll be honest, about the game. Today, excited to talk about the game. Jesus Christ. Yeah, but Matthias, before we really talk about the Bayern game, what is on your Easter meal menu?
Oh, geez. We had lamb, really good lamb, made on the barbecue by someone who's significantly better at making lamb on the barbecue than I am. So that was really enjoyable. I didn't have to do any cooking, so that was even better. But yeah, we had lamb and, gosh, I'm trying to remember. We had a key lime pie for dessert. Those were like the two standout things that I remembered.
Sounds delicious.
It really was, and actually now that I'm thinking about it, and it's 2 hours until lunch, I'm kind of hungry now. So, that's what I had that
good,
I remember.
Good. Yeah, we had baked honey ham, and for dessert it was strawberry shortcake. So, going well here as well. We had the family over, so a nice Easter all around. Yeah, of course, Dortmund beating Bayern 2-0 really did contribute to that. And Matthias, should we go as far as saying that this was the best Dortmund performance of the season?
You know, that's a hard one to say. It's definitely right up there. Dortmund have had some really good performances, halves, sections of matches, but
yeah,
I think
but
as
was
far
like
as
the full 90 minutes where
yeah,
they performed
yeah.
well.
As far as a complete game, without really anywhere I sit there and go, oh, wow, that was a massive screw up period where we're scrambling for something. No, I would say this was the most complete good game that Dortmund played this season.
Yeah, I would also say that I think that was maybe not the best, as they call it, their Klassiker ever. I think Thomas Tuchel after the game said it was a mediocre game, and while I know he's a sore loser, I think in terms of high-level football that we're used to from back in the day, maybe not quite there. Also has much to do with how poor Bayern are performing these days, but I think that Dortmund's game plan worked out exceedingly well, and I think Edin Terzic does deserve credit for that, because I think this is the sort of game he knows how to prepare for. Dortmund set up with Metscher in midfield next to Emre Can and Julian Brandt, if you will, because it was more of a 4-3-3, and that was sort of designed to take Bayern's midfield and also Musiala, Müller, Goretzka and Laimer sort of out of the game and really forced Bayern to play over the wings. And then Dortmund, I think, really did well when Bayern had possession on the wings to double up their wingers, be that Musiala, be that Sané, or later Gnabry and Coman. And also Alfonso Davies, I thought, did not really have a good game either, because he was often left open in build-up and didn't really know how to capitalize with that. So from a defensive organization, I thought that Dortmund did really, really well. Throughout the entire game, I was fairly happy. And considering that Dortmund were minus Kobel and minus Donny Malen, I think they also deserve a lot of credit for compensating these losses. I thought that Alex Meyer had a really good game. Probably only one big save to make. I think it was the command chance that came off a Kimmich corner. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it was the only shot on target.
That's crazy. Bayern really had only one
shot. Yep, one shot on target from 17. And Dortmund, let me just scroll
five
here real
11.
Quick. The 5 of 11. So 6% shot on target ratio versus 45%. And yeah, I mean, that's one of the massively telling statistics of this match. The other one, of course, being my ultimate statistic for you're going to not win, are the number of crosses played by a favorite. You know, not necessarily an underdog, but if you look at favorites, you know, Bayern played 30 crosses, Dortmund 10. So what that always, that's the desperation stat, as I always like to look at it, because it was like, well, we'll hoof it in there and hope that Harry Kane gets on the end of it and scores. And
well, almost did the one
he
time.
Almost did. And the 22nd minute, which when you really, really think about it, yeah, Coman's shot on target, you know, the biggest scoring opportunity that Bayern had was in that 22nd minute. I'm going to discount the offside goal because it was offside, so that doesn't count as a scoring opportunity for me. But if you look at that 22nd minute, open header, unmarked, you know, you would put money on Harry Kane putting that away for his 32nd goal of the season, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. But he whiffed. And so after that, Bayern, yeah, they had more possession, especially then towards the end of it, which made sense. They played more passes, though not significantly more. Their pass accuracy was a little bit better than Dortmund's, but not by much. And I think crosses play into that. Bayern were lacking in solutions, and Dortmund were extremely solid, played very well on the counter, and Bayern just couldn't find an answer. And I know this was Dortmund's first win in München in 10 years, but just a few weeks ago, Bremen won their first time in München in 16 years. So, like, this is the season where kind of this Bayern aura got further chipped away. And so if we just look at the Rückrunde, the second half of the season, Bayern's season has completely fallen apart in the second half of the season, whereas obviously Dortmund and Leverkusen and Stuttgart continue to perform very, very well, Dortmund finally. So, yeah, it was optically, it was a bit of an illusion, the match, because it looked like for large periods of the match, Bayern were the dominant side, but they really weren't, because they weren't doing anything. And that's something we've bemoaned about Dortmund in certain matches, where they're like, well, okay, optically it seems like they're dominant, but they're not really doing anything. And it was nice to say that about Bayern for once.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the major reasons why they weren't doing much was Mats Hummels. I think that was yet another marquee performance from him. Truly iconic save on the line with a boot really high. I would have torn every ligament in my body if I had to recreate that, to basically deny Eric Dier a header on goal. And yeah, I think the ball touched his hand then after the clear, but in my book, that's not really a handball. And In the Champions League, I'm sure it would have been given somehow, but I'm very glad that this time it wasn't. But just commanding performance all around, be it the sliding tackle, be it interceptions, be it the diagonal balls to Riason or Adeyemi or whatever it was. It's just as good as it gets, really, world-class performance. Also, a lot to do with the fact that Dortmund did not allow Bayern to really dribble through the middle and really get behind Dortmund's backline. So the pace advantage that any striker, minus Kane, of course, would have on Dortmund, on Hummels, wasn't really visible. And I was really wowed by how well Hummels played and how amazing of a defender he is. And I think Lars was on Twitter asking whether Hummels, considering the time he has played for Dortmund now, could he be deemed Dortmund's best player ever? I honestly don't know if that's an answerable question.
Yeah, that's hard to answer when you think back to, you know, if you go all the way back to the 50s when Dortmund's first major period of time of success was, if you can consider him the greatest Dortmund player ever. That's a big one.
Yeah, honestly, I can't answer that. It's just like how people in Formula One argue whether it's Hamilton, Verstappen, Senna, Fangio, etc. You know what I mean? It's really hard to say, honestly, but he is certainly up there in this generation. I think he is one of the best players for sure. I mean, he will be dearly missed whenever he retires. And Matthias, you said that you could see him doing that at the end of this year. And there, of course, are reports out that Hummels will not continue his Dortmund career if Terzic remains. So we'll see what happens. But what's your take on that situation?
Well, I believe I read it today in Kicker where Hummels was quoted in saying that April will be the hardest month of his career. But until then, there are still opportunities for a lot of great moments. I read that as he will not be playing at Borussia Dortmund next season. And that'll either be down to one of two factors. That'll be down to he either ends his career at 35 or he moves on to a sunset cruise outside of the Bundesliga. I think the MLS or Serie A. Obviously, Serie A is littered and has always been littered with defenders in their mid to late 30s still having really good careers.
littered.
And he's an exceptional defender. I mean, he, like we talked before recording, obviously he's lost pace over the years, but I believe his positional play has gotten better. And it's gotten better this season, even over last season. And that's really what makes the great defenders great, is they understand, or any player, where their issues are and what their strengths are. And they develop their strengths even further in any sport. And so I could see Mats Hummels then going to maybe MLS. Serie A, I think, would be better. I think he would actually be valued there a little bit more. The payday in the MLS may be better. Or he ends his career. I think that'll also come down to whether or not Nagelsmann selects him for the Euros, which I think if Nagelsmann doesn't pick him, that would be kind of insane because he's one of the best defenders in the Bundesliga this season yet again. And an omission would be I wouldn't understand it, to be perfectly honest. And then if he does go to the Euros, how does Germany fare at the Euros? You know, if it's another disappointment or if they end up exceeding expectations with the last few test matches, alluding to maybe it's the latter more than the former. So I think a lot of those things will play into it, but I do not foresee him extending his contract by another year in Dortmund.
Well, I'm curious because I honestly don't have a gut feeling on this at all. I think it can go either way. I'm a bit more certain that it's probably going to be the last season for Marco Reus. But who knows? Everything is up in the air. Dortmund don't even have a sporting director for next season because it might be Sven Mislintat. It might not be. Ruhr Nachrichten and Kicker have reported that it's very close that he will take over from Sebastian Kehl, and then Sebastian Kehl supposedly will become the so-called Geschäftsführer Sport, so basically one above then the sporting director, basically trying to split the old Watzke position into more of the CEO part and then the sporting CEO part, if that makes sense. So yeah, a lot of things are in flux, let's say. Matthias, I'm curious how Sven Mislintat would do. Obviously, he has been around a bit since he left Dortmund in a, in a huff after the falling out with Thomas Tuchel. Curious whether that would be a good signing or not, if he indeed does take over as a sporting director. Matthias, he has been at Ajax, Arsenal and Stuttgart as far as I recall from the top of my head. What would your take be on Sven Mislintat returning as a more prominent position? Because recently he was only, in quotation marks, Dortmund's chief scout, but now he would be sporting director.
Yeah, I mean, Sven Mislintat, he began his career at Dortmund, I believe, in 1998, and he left in 2017, if memory serves me correctly, so almost 20 years at the club. He, you know, he was called the diamond eye for people that he signed that really paid off. Shinji Kagawa probably being the biggest of those. Yes, he's got Dembele and Aubameyang and stuff like that, but Shinji Kagawa just was, you know, ultra cheap, came out of Japan, nobody had heard of him, and obviously he became a Dortmund club legend. He left because of the issues with Thomas Tuchel, which isn't surprising because it's Thomas Tuchel. I probably wouldn't enjoy working with the man either, to be perfectly honest.
Who does? Seemingly nobody.
Seemingly nobody likes working with him. I think he went to Arsenal after that. I don't remember what the issues were there, but that was also, you know, the pre-Arteta time at Arsenal when things were very much in flux still at Arsenal. He then went to Stuttgart. Stuttgart are, when it comes to that level, so we're talking off the pitch, Stuttgart are a nightmare club. They still are, despite all the success this season. It's a complete farce in that
cluster
club.
Fuck, one would say.
Yeah, and how it's being led. I mean, it's HSV, it's Köln at its worst. I mean, it's Frankfurt as they once were, though they're not that way anymore. So I don't even fault him for not surviving in Stuttgart, because it's a nightmare when even club legends bow out because they're like, this is just, I can't even deal with this. And then he went to Ajax, and I believe, honestly, from everything that I read, that Ajax did him dirty, but that seems to be a general issue at Ajax, another head case club when it comes to politics internally. He was linked with some things about a transfer with Bona Sosa at Stuttgart and allegations. He left. In retrospect, it turns out none of the allegations were true. So, but Ajax now, after I think a month of their new sporting director, CEO, he's been pushed out because of more other allegations. So that's like, that's a poison chalice as well. So, you know, post Dortmund, he kind of hopped around big clubs that were poisonous or toxic. Arsenal at that time, I'd say less so now. Stuttgart still, and Ajax definitely. So coming back to Dortmund, where, you know, Dortmund obviously have their faults, but there is a stability there, at least in the front office aspect of it for the last 20 plus years, or 20 years essentially. And so I think that we would probably see the best of Sven Mislintat. He understands the club, he identifies with the club, he understands the people that are involved with the club, like Sebastian Kehl. Obviously they spent many years together at the club. Kehl is a player. And so I think overall it would be a good move for both parties, because he's also extremely experienced. And then Kehl moving more into that position up, and then splitting what Watzke Vetska's responsibilities were between two different people, I think is a really smart choice, where you separate the sport from the business financial side, because I believe you need experts for each nowadays, especially as we're in a world of niche down expertise, not generalists anymore like you used to have. I would say Vatska fell a little more generalist, Mikhail Tsoak a little bit more generalist, and now we're falling more into the category where in general business, you know, you've got CFO, CMO, COO, CEOs, everything is very, very specialized. And I think football clubs are falling into that as well, which makes sense and tends to be the successful models.
Yeah, as the executive vice president of the Yellow Wolf, I agree with
that. Exactly.
I don't know, but yeah, all these job titles are often very made up, especially in corporate America, I have found. So that to me is very funny. But yeah, you're right. What I do like about Sven Mislintat really is the experience also with Dortmund and basically knowing sort of what player profiles, what he needs to look for. I think that is, and where he needs to look for. I think that is maybe not unimportant, especially for smooth transition, that he has experience in exactly what Dortmund's needs are and has had enjoyed success beforehand. And maybe because he will have more power at the club, will be able to sign players that he thinks Dortmund need, versus the time where he wanted to sign players, but coaches then had other ideas, and maybe that time around he can twist arms a little bit more. But more, I don't know if it's positive or negative if Sven Mislintat has more power at the club, to be honest. But maybe it'll be, because I personally always think it's better power structure wise to have a more powerful sporting director than coach, and that the sporting director is more the reigning hand when it comes to the overall philosophy of the club and building the squad, because coaches have a much quicker expiration date. So I think that is often a big plus in the strategy of clubs overall, if they're well executed, that the sporting director is the one in charge for the sporting philosophy in before the coach, because he also hires the coach for the squad that he builds. So a very integral part. And so if he really does take over for Sebastian Kehl, I for now think it's a good thing, but with the asterisk that I really don't know for sure either. So it's another wait and see moment. But yeah, apologies to the listeners for the lack of structure in this podcast. It is certainly my fault, because we're bouncing around subjects here. But we're obviously not done talking about the Bayern game, because we haven't even talked about the Dortmund goals yet. And yes, we have been on the Mats Hummels praise, and for good reason. But I think it is also certain that Nico Schlotterbeck deserves a shout out. And he, of course, was the initiator for Dortmund's opening goal, picking off a Thomas Müller pass and then moving it along quickly. And in that moment, I also want to give a quick shout out to Niklas Füllkrug, who has been picked on a lot, but I think the whatever back heel move pass it was to Julian Brandt, where he was played the ball on really quickly, I think was super effective. And without that very quick pass on, the goal never would have happened. So in that regard, I think well done. Both goals the Dortmund scored were produced by strikers thinking quickly. So shout out to Füllkrug there. I thought that Julian Brandt overcooked the pass to Adeyemi a little bit, who just ran past Erik Dier, which was just nice to watch. And really why I'm always saying that Adeyemi's pace is such an advantage, especially in the high profile games, because very often just the raw pace is what you need to make a difference, just the individual skill in that category. And yeah, I think Dortmund were a bit lucky that it was Sven Ulreich being in goal and not Manuel Neuer, because knowing how Manuel Neuer plays in goal, he probably would have met Karim Adeyemi right where he received the pass and not waited so far in his own goal, because I do think that Brandt overcooked it just a tiny bit, and the better keeper, not named Sven Ulreich, probably would have gotten to it right before the shot. And yeah, Sven Ulrich to not then really parry it, but just sort of make contact and not manage to steer it around the post. Another lucky moment for Dortmund. I think that Ulreich is a good keeper who often makes the save, so it's a bit of a mistake from him, but I don't want to take anything away from Karim Adeyemi, because that left-footed finish at high pace, to have so much pace on the ball that it beats the keeper that way, to me, was of extreme quality and a very nice goal for Dortmund. Matthias, I don't know if you have anything to add to that whole sequence, but to me, it was a really nice textbook counterattack.
100%. It was perfectly played out. I think Niklas Füllkrug's touch was very, very important. And in general, movement was important in this, in both goals. And we'll talk about the second goal in a minute. But it was the perfect counterattacking team goal, exactly what we want from Dortmund and from Adeyemi, because of his extreme pace. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they brought him to the club, is because of those situations where he can just blow past defenders in a one-on-one race. There are very few that can keep up with him, and he was on the correct side, because Alphonso Davies, I think, could have kept up with him. But on the De Ligt and Kimmich side,
was it
De Ligt
or Dyer, or who did he run past? I've already forgotten.
I believe it was De Ligt. Dyer is on the left-hand side, if memory serves me correctly. In fact, I can.
It was De Ligt. I just looked.
Yes.
Yep. At the goal. So yeah.
Yep.
You're right.
And that was the perfect matchup. I mean, honestly, to have Eliasson on the right hand side, who's a little bit more defensive, in a fullback side, and then Sancho on that side also in terms of pressing and so on, and then have the other matchup on the other side. It was perfect. It was perfect matchups. The way Dortmund and Bayern lined up for Dortmund, not so much for Bayern. Yes, I will say Manuel Neuer is obviously better than Sven Ulreich and would have been out there way, way sooner. But, and I've heard, you know, I saw a Bayern fan say, well, you know, if Neuer was in goal, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, both backup keepers played in this match, so I don't care.
Yeah, no. It's interesting that Alex Meyer now has probably scored more points against Bayern than Kobel has. Alex Meyer really is a very lucky goalkeeper, and what a find, honestly. Jahn Regensburg, third division, if I'm not, or maybe relegated to the second, to third division when Dortmund picked him up. The way he is playing, I'm so far to say that if for whatever reason Dortmund sell Kobel right now, I would not be opposed of just declaring Alex Meyer as Dortmund's number one for the time being. That would not give me heart palpitations, if I'm honest. He is obviously not on the same level as Kobel, but I think for second string keeper, he's a 1B, and that makes me very happy and does win Dortmund a lot of points. And he is there when it counts very often, and that is something very important to have for Dortmund. And I think we need to talk about the two loanees that Dortmund signed this winter, because you already said Eliasson on the right side had a tremendous game. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Bayern's second highest XG chance was Harry Kane's header in the seventh minute that he had it right against Riason's head. Did not get a yield in another corner kick, which was probably deserved, but it was a blocked shot. But not only for that, I think that Riason against Davies had a tremendous game, and so did Jadon Sancho, really, who did abuse Alphonso Davies quite often, picked him out and really danced around him 1v1. And to me, Jadon Sancho right now is playing really amazing football and very grown-up football, and is a difference maker in these top games, because he is one that can hold onto the ball a little bit too and beat opponents 1v1. And I think that by now it's safe to say he has arrived fully in Dortmund and is playing at the top of his game again. Maybe not with the same assist and scoring rate as in the past, but I think he is a very impactful player regardless. And that right now is all you can ask for a player that really hasn't featured for half a season or so, barely get any team training in. And on the other side, Ian Madsen, I thought, also had a tremendous game. The way he is also consistently running, his one chance that he had where he ran away from every Bayern defender was also really cool. But more importantly, when it came to the tandem defending and doubling up players on the wings, I thought he was good. I would say that he is probably defensively similar to Guerrero, not the best defender, but he is still much, much better than Rafael Guerrero defensively, I would say, because he does try and hustle. Sometimes you get beaten by very good opponents. That happens. But I think overall, Dortmund fans can be very happy with him. And of course, in the build-up, he is very responsible with the ball most of the time. And the fact that he can slot into midfield as a sort of inverted fullback and pass the ball around there too and create maybe equal the numbers in midfield versus the position and give Dortmund just another angle to pass through the middle, I think is huge. And in this game, it showed that Dortmund had two good fullbacks, and I don't think we have even mentioned that Karim Benzebaini has returned from the national team with some torn ligament and will be out for, I think, 2 to 3 months or so. So he's definitely out for the season. But yeah, Ian Madsen, to me, really good. Jadon Sancho, really good. And I think deserved their praise because it really did balance Dortmund's team out. I don't really think we had too many weak points. I think if you really want to criticize players, it might be Emre Can and Metcha in midfield. I think you could do even better there. But otherwise, and maybe, of course, you can upgrade the striker position. But otherwise, I thought that Dortmund had a very balanced team sheet there, and everyone more or less did what they needed to do. And one more thing I wanted to talk about is the possession retention by Dortmund, especially in the first half. I found it odd that Dortmund often had the chances to attack Bayern, but once they arrived in the final third, they didn't quite go through with their attacks. The final pass just never materialized, but instead they sort of stepped on the ball and then circulated possession, and I wasn't quite sure if Dortmund didn't know whether how to attack Bayern or whether that was intentional. And I'll just give them the benefit of the doubt, because I think it did really trouble Bayern for Dortmund to have such long periods of possession. So maybe it was a good game plan to do it like that. Overall, I thought that Dortmund probably had their best game in possession in Munich in years, and I'll be honest, I think that also has a lot to do with how poor Bayern are. Their pressing and counter pressing is shambolic to non-existent, especially compared to years past, where they were always hounding Dortmund left, right and center, and you hardly saw anything of that caliber at all. Because I do believe if Bayern were really truly pressing Dortmund throughout the entire game, it would have ended differently. But they didn't, and so Dortmund managed to really exploit the spaces they were afforded. So to me, a very enjoyable game, because I never really had my doubts that Dortmund were going to lose this one or win this one, however you want to put it. Matthias, do you have any final thoughts on this tremendous victory? And maybe one question I should ask, do you believe that Leverkusen scoring the 2-1 winner in Hoffenheim so late deflated Bayern even more as they entered the pitch against Dortmund on Saturday night?
So first, I do want to bring up the second goal for Dortmund.
Because
Riasson had another fantastic finish. It seems like he does not score boring goals, which is just great. I like the guy. He reminds me of, the great Klopp teams when you had someone like a Schmelzer or a Großkreutz in there, who you can argue there are technically better players, but they just step up and deliver. And that's what he does. He's consistent. I am never concerned about him. And he was another great signing for the club at a really, really good price. But part of that buildup that I really liked, aside from Alea taking his time, playing out the pass. What also made it was Adeyemi's run across Alea, which put the Bayern defenders, you know, with Dier and De Ligt, in a weird position where they didn't quite know what to do. So they backed off enough that it gave Alea the time to see Riasson, and Riasson then had the time to look where he wanted to place the shot. So that was also a fantastic team goal that I wouldn't put in the category of counterattacking, just a good team goal. Great movement on and off the ball, and it worked perfectly, and it illustrated Dortmund's strengths this match, because I think Dortmund had more opportunities. Adeyemi had an opportunity that could have been better. Kimmich cheated to the outside when Adeyemi was moving up the pitch, and Adeyemi passed it to the outside. If he would have waited just half a second longer, he would have seen that space, and he would have just walked straight at Ulreich, and I would have put money on him.
I remember that, yes.
And he would have scored. I have no doubt about it. And then, of course, also the movement that freed up Felix Metscha, who had another great opportunity and just played it, his shot too centrally.
That was Dortmund's best chance of the game, actually.
For sure, from an XG standpoint. But when you put all this together, and I know Bayern have a 1.5 XG, Dortmund a 0.9 XG.
Yeah, Bayern also had 17 shots.
Correct. Yeah, and that plays into
Nickel it. Nickel and diming your XG up does not really make do much for you either.
And watching
which is
the
why
match,
it's a flawed stat.
Correct. And watching the match back on extended highlights, Dortmund had better opportunities to score by far, you know. And so a deserved 2-0 victory. I find it laughable that Bayern fans and Tuchel afterwards complained about officiating and, you know, the stamp from Riasson where he should have gotten a red card, and the Hummels handball. And I'm like, okay, first of all, Bayern, shut the fuck up. Okay, I think I speak for every Bundesliga fan in 60 years to say, shut up. And as a Dortmund fan, if I just go back the last 10 years, 10, 12 years since the Champions League final, at the least, where it was like, please, you've gotten so many calls, it's not even funny. And when we talk about stamps, you know, Kimmich, Sancho, that just comes to mind right away, and all of the Ribéry incidents. So overall, absolutely deserved victory by Dortmund, complete team performance, and a really, really, really happy. I don't think that the Leverkusen last-minute win would have deflated the Bayern players, to be honest. They're professional enough that I think they can just knock that out of their heads. It was funny for me, you know, until the 88th minute, obviously when the match turned, I was like, wouldn't it be the most Leverkusen thing ever to, now that Xabi Alonso says I'm going to stay, the whole season falls apart. But then it didn't. And in fact, I personally believe that between that victory and the Dortmund's victory, that has sealed the deal for Leverkusen to do the double this season domestically. I don't foresee them not winning the DFB Pokal, be that against a so-so second Bundesliga side, Düsseldorf, and a relegation candidate second Bundesliga side, Kaiserslautern. I just think Leverkusen are going to win, do the double, which is an interesting and weird sentence to say.
I mean, they might win the triple if they do well in the Europa League, but they have to beat Liverpool, so it's not that easy.
And Liverpool are playing for Klopp. And when a team decides they're going to play for Klopp, they play for Klopp. In Klopp's last season at Dortmund, we saw that, where they came back from, oh my God, are Dortmund going to be relegation fodder, to, you know, granted, they only finished in the Europa League, but when you look at how that second half of the season went, it changed a lot. So I think I would be, it's going to be an interesting match. I'm actually going to watch Liverpool against Leverkusen because it'll be extremely fascinating. And I think it'll be a really fun matchup to watch. But I don't even think Bayer Leverkusen, with all of their history, is going to screw this one up.
Well, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I do think that the Harry Kane's Spursy curse is bigger than the Leverkusen curse. I think we have now scientifically proven that. Unless, of course, Leverkusen now really fall apart. But I hope they...
Okay, all right, okay. I'm sorry, since you brought it up, I'm going to have to say something to it.
Oh, no.
There is no Harry Kane Spurs curse because, with one or two exceptions, the whole time Harry Kane was at Tottenham, they were never really in a position to win the league except for the year Leicester won the Premier League. But overall, it's a meme that has just gotten out of hand, people. We need to stop.
It is most certainly a meme. So are Leverkusen, very memeable. I'll be honest. My only hope is now that Dortmund do not allow Leverkusen to win it at the Westfalenstadion in 3 match days time, because theoretically Leverkusen could secure the Bundesliga by then. But that also requires for Bayern to win their next 2 games, which is also not guaranteed since they are currently not playing really well. One final point I wanted to make actually on the Dortmund game, because you just talked about the goal, which I somehow ignored, even though I have it right in front of me, and it was a really well-crafted team goal, is that I'm just very happy that Dortmund now, for this harrowing month of April, have Sebastian Allaire as maybe the backup, because I don't know when he will be fit enough to be a starting striker. But I will never forget the time when Dortmund were playing in Munich. It was a 2-2 draw, if I remember correctly, and Dortmund were actually the better team, were pushing for a victory, and then Haaland had to come off due to muscular problems, and the replacement for him was Steffen Tigges. And I like Steffen Tigges, but in my mind, he is a third division striker, maybe second division striker, but most certainly not a first division striker, and absolutely not a striker that should be anywhere near a Dortmund team in a high profile game like this. And so to follow up Füllkrug, who is a solid, decent striker, with Sebastian Allaire, who did in his stint really well in terms of hold up play, ball distribution, and of course the very sweet assist that he had, just is a sign of quality that I hope Dortmund can bank on in the next weeks, because I think it is difference making. And so that is something, first of all, nice to see him return on the pitch and finally contribute in a positive way. So he is hoping that will continue in the next coming weeks. And with that, I think we can talk about the Stuttgart game. Stuttgart, who are in form, but just had a very crazy derby where they came back to tie it in the, really with the last kick of the game, after they fumbled a 2-0 lead against Heidenheim. Don't know of a team that could do such a thing. We're 2-3 down, and then in stoppage time scored the equalizer to have absolute pandemonium at the Mercedes-Benz Arena, or whatever the heck the stadium is called right now. Stuttgart, of course, are in third place ahead of Dortmund, and you know, it's a 4-point gap. Goal difference is +6 between those two, so Dortmund has something to make up there. So ideally, a 3-0 win. Stuttgart are the team that has beaten Dortmund twice this season and has beaten them quite soundly, I would say. Once in the cup and once in the league. I don't think that in either games Dortmund were the better team, and in either both games Dortmund were happy to only lose, I think, 2-0 or so it was. I'm not quite sure anymore, but they are a very good, very dangerous team, and they will be the team for Dortmund's 50th birthday of the Westfalenstadion. So, Matthias, is there any doubt that Dortmund will not win when the Signal Iduna Park, as they now call it, turns 50 years old?
Okay, so first of all, the Stuttgart League match, Dortmund were actually up 1-0 at halftime. because Füllkrug.
That was a goal where no one was quite sure why Dortmund were up 1-0.
Exactly. And I think it was it Führich who missed a penalty for Stuttgart? Kobel saved it. Like, they had two penalties. It was a bit of a weird match, but be that as it may.
Yes, there was a Dortmund penalty save for the first time in 50 years, and then Dortmund also lost by a penalty, I remember. Yeah.
That being said, Stuttgart deserved to win that match, and they deserved to win in the cup. They were the significantly better team in both situations. So this will be redemption time for Terzic and for this team. I believe they're professional enough to be up for it. On top of it, the push and the, I expect, fantastic tifos, choreos, whatever you want to call it, from the Dortmund Ultras for the 50th anniversary of the Westfalenstadion. I think Dortmund will be hyped up for it. I hope they're not too hyped up, because obviously then Schlotterbeck does Schlotterbeck. and the win against Bayern just will give them a lot of confidence. Stuttgart do not lack confidence. The good thing for Stuttgart fans is that the total chaos at the club has not seeped onto the pitch. That is the saving grace for VfB Stuttgart this season. I think we're going to be in for a very, very good match. Here's my fear. My fear is that Terzic is going to set Dortmund up to not lose versus setting Dortmund up to win. And I think if he sets up Dortmund to not lose against Stuttgart at home in such a pivotal match, then I mean, they could come away with a point or a smash and grab, but nobody wants that. They want Dortmund to come out and play. And even if Dortmund, if it ends up 3-3 or 3-4, as long as Dortmund comes out and plays, that'll be key and significant also for Edin Terzic's future. And this is why I kind of asterisk a lot of these things. When we look at performances home and away, Dortmund are the second best team away from home, but only the fifth best team at home. They have lost three times at the Westfalenstadion this season and only once away from home. And that to me is weird. Until I looked at it the other day, I didn't know that. And so this will be a significant test for that. And if we also look at the second half of the season, these are the two of the top three teams in the second half of the season. Leverkusen with 28 points, Dortmund and Stuttgart both with 23 points, equal record, but Dortmund better defensively. And then followed by the story of the second half of the season, FC Augsburg, who could actually make it into Europe after the season. If Leverkusen win the cup and all that stuff. So I think this is the bigger game overall for Dortmund, because it is the direct confrontation, as you will, against the team that's just ahead of them. This is the six-pointer, so to speak, that Dortmund need to win.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that assessment. I mean, there will be a few more of those, I presume, just because Dortmund April
Leipzig will... at the end of April, yeah.
Yes. But nevertheless, I'm very curious to see how Dortmund will deal with Stuttgart, because I think that Stuttgart will, unlike Bayern, press them much, much better. So I don't think it'll be as easy for Dortmund to pass the ball around. But at the same time, you know, Dortmund obviously, in theory, on paper, would do better in such a game, just because they can set up defensively. But I don't think it's allowed, as you said. It's just not allowed. You're not allowed to do the thing that would probably earn you a more likely victory, which is ironic, but that's how the expectations are, that Dortmund needs to be more proactive, really. And they can be, if I may say so. I do believe that they can play better football than they have in the past, but VfB Stuttgart are just a really good team, and of course with Guirassy, Undav, etc., they just have so many weapons to really hurt Dortmund. So I'm and also a lot of athletic weapons, which might not be as positive for Mats Hummels as previously, but nevertheless, I'm really excited for this game because I think it's going to be a good game, and Dortmund are in much better form than they were when they faced Stuttgart the first two times. So I'm not sure if Dortmund are going to win this game. My gut feeling tells me that might be a draw, but even then, I don't think that's a horrible result. But obviously, if Dortmund manage to beat Stuttgart, that's going to be a massive step toward Champions League qualification. I mean, it had already massively helped that Leipzig had a scoreless draw against Mainz on the past match day, and Dortmund actually got some breathing space, but not a lot, to be honest. So this really is a very decisive April. And on Wednesday, Dortmund play away to Atletico Madrid. So it's going to be a really exciting time. And of course, Gladbach in between the quarterfinals, and you play Leverkusen and you play Leipzig. So Gladbach probably the easiest game on the schedule, but who knows? I mean, Gladbach, I think they just got shellacked. But still, I don't think Dortmund's trips to Borussia Park are easy either. So yeah, Matthias, I'm really excited. As you said, the Tifo is probably going to be insane. And of course, how do you like the special kit with the red and white numbers on the back?
I don't really care. Like, of all the things I don't care about, kits tend to be pretty high up there.
Fair.
It's fine. It's cool. Fine. I care more about them playing well than looking good.
Well, I still believe had they played the final match of the season in the home kit of last season and not the new kit, that they would have won. But that's a theory I cannot prove. But that's just yeah.
Hey, Dortmund had one of their greatest seasons ever wearing a polka dot kit. So
that is true.
You know,
and they had one of their most famous wins in a yellow and white shirt. So
yeah, exactly.
Beating Schalke 2-0 on the penultimate match day and ruining their championship is what I'm talking about in 2007. Obviously, is it my favorite special kid ever? No. But either way, Matthias, I don't want to really expand on the history of the Westfalenstadion. I think there's plenty of content on that out there. But I do want to say, I mean, the Yellow Wall podcast is named after the Yellow Wall, obviously, a world famous stand in sports. And we do have one of the best stadiums in sports, period. And of course, Dortmund's fans are also famous for how great they are. So I do think this is a significant moment still to mark that birthday and having built the Westfalenstadion and developed it to what it is now. I remember when the corners weren't at the stadium yet before the World Cup, and it's funny because I grew up very close to the Westfalenstadion, like let's say a kilometer, and when I was a kid, obviously when there were night games, European games, whatever, I could very well hear the Yellow Wall sing, and it was much louder then because the noise just did not leave the stadium. Well, it left the stadium much better because the lack of the corners that are there now. So I want to say because of the corners, the stadium got a little bit louder too if you're in the stadium. But back in the day, you could certainly hear much better how the fans were chanting, cheering, singing, whatever, without the corners. So the final form of the Westfalenstadion to me is... it's just very easy on the eyes. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think the the steps of renovation of that stadium have gone extremely well, and I just love being in this ground, whether it's completely empty or completely full. I don't know. To me, it's certainly a place of home. Certainly also due to the vicinity of my de facto home, but nevertheless, it's a place of love and a place that I gain energy rather than losing it. Although, if people hear me talk, it often probably sounds opposite. But we should cherish this very, very special place that we can call our footballing home.
I totally agree, and I also love the fact that right next door is the old stadium, still there, Stadion Rote Erde, where you still have the original entryway going in there, and where really the legacy of Dortmund was born.
Amazing Bratwurst, by the way.
Yes, 100%. And so if you ever get the opportunity to go to Dortmund, whether it's for a match or not, I definitely recommend checking out that stadium as well, because that's where the foundation for Dortmund was laid in the 50s and 60s. So, yeah, it's one of my favorite places to go to for not just sporting, but just in general. You know, you see it and you smile. You see it already when you're driving and you kind of see those yellow corners pop up. You know, between the trees and stuff like that. It's really cool. So definitely better than the shit they planted in Munich. So
yeah, this glowing prolapsed anus is not as near beautiful than anything, not even close to the Westfalenstadion. So yeah, I mean, in general, the area is really nice. I mean, I used to do athletics when I was younger, and I would compete in the Helmut König Halle. Also, our Bundesjugendspiele were in the Stadion Rote Erde, so I competed there as well in that stadium, and I can attest that the pitch is never quite as great as it is in the Westfalenstadion. And of course, on a hot summer day, going to Stadion Rote Erde, to this little beer garden they have in the entrance, is something I can only recommend. And yeah, the Westfalenhallen and so, who just got renovated a few years ago, pretty cool too. So I think the entire area, which is, if you will, also connected to the Westfalen Park, is just a nice all around area. And I like walking around there. Usually when I'm in Dortmund, this is when I go for a run, sort of, where I do go for a run. So it's most certainly nice. One criticism I have is that the Fanwelt, which make very good waffles, have omitted the hot cherries and cream. That is one big gripe that I have, because personally, to me, when you're in Dortmund or in a rural area, just like, you have good currywurst, you also have good waffles with cream and hot cherries. And since Dortmund have replace that with some vanilla and chocolate syrup, I do have to complain a little bit, but I'm going off on a tangent. But still, very important. If anyone's listening, please change it back. But yeah, the history of this ground is undeniable, and obviously there will be more chapters written, and I can't wait to experience them and hopefully be there more often again. I was there this season against Wolfsburg, famous 1-0 victory. Matthias, when was the last time you were in the Westfalenstadion?
It's been a long time. I'll be honest, I can't quite remember. It was pre-COVID. And oh gosh, it may have been 2018, I think, was the last time. Yeah, it was with my daughter. And it was a match against SFC Köln. And Michi, the bat, wow.
Batshuayi, wow.
There you go. Scored the 1-0 victory.
Man, it's time for you to go back. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's been an interesting 4 years, so.
Well, Matthias, I personally can't wait for my next visit. I'm not quite sure when that's going to be, because the next time I'll be in Dortmund is going to be during the off season, unfortunately. But nevertheless, yeah, we are all looking forward to this game, and I think it's safe to say this month. I hope it's going to be a good month for Dortmund. At least going into it, Dortmund don't have too many injuries and concerns. The return of Alea, I just talked about it, is really good. Mats Hummels and Nico Schlotterbeck are in excellent form. Our fullbacks are playing well. Felix Metscher is returning, which I think is not unimportant. And of course, Marcel Sabitzer will also return now from his suspension. So there is going to be some bolstering there. Still believe that Marco Reus and Julian Brandt are very good in contributing whenever they play. And with Jadon Sancho, Daniel Malen, Adeyemi, I think Dortmund have a really powerful midfield, and Bino Gittens, I think, can also be a difference maker here and there, although not being as prominent. But I think overall, I'm feeling relatively positive, considering that under Terzic, Dortmund has not reached the heights of football development that we were all hoping for. I think that is safe to say. But Matthias, before we end the show, just one general vibe check with you going into this April of Truth. what do you expect, and how do you feel about all these games?
Well, I mean, a lot of ups and downs. I mean, just a quick glance at the schedule. Gladbach is the easiest match on the schedule, because I think Augsburg is also going to be really, really difficult. So they're in the beginning of May. I apologize. But make or break month for Edin Terzic and for this club for next season. Overall, my feeling is cautious optimism.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, if Dortmund will make the Champions League semi-final, that already would be amazing. And the fact
I'll be honest, I think they can get past Atleti. I absolutely believe they can get past Atletico Madrid. I'm more confident in them getting past Atletico Madrid than necessarily them beating Stuttgart, Leverkusen, and Leipzig.
Interesting. Yeah, I can wait. Matthias, I know usually we do this not on the show, but will you be around for a preview next Monday or Tuesday for the Atletico game?
Next Tuesday for sure.
Good. Then we'll talk more then. Until then, as always, everyone out there, thank you so much for listening, and we shall be back next time. Until then, goodbye.